The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. We're broadcasting to you live from our Edmond, Oklahoma headquarters studio today. I thought to change my printer settings to letter as opposed to A4, so it's going to be a great day for me. I remembered that. Usually I have one printing where everything's fouled up a little bit, but not so today. We had a productive day of travel yesterday, and I think I had the show in pretty good shape just a couple of hours ago, and then got a long email news gathering update from Richard at Edstone saying that this was a pretty significant news day. So I appreciate Richard giving me lots of work, lots of extra work to do at the very, very, very last minute. We'll roll through some of the headlines that he sent through. Actually, I'm very appreciative of the work that the news gatherers put in. We've got them all over the world. Richard and the bunch at Edstone. Brent chips in at Jerusalem. We've even got Jessica. She's visiting her parents in Arizona. She's helped compile some of the content for today's program as well. So it does help when you're traveling through the day to know that there are busy bees helping to gather up items for these daily broadcasts. This one, by the way, is coming to you once again live on YouTube. We've actually got the video going for this one, although I didn't put on a tie today, so hopefully you'll forgive me for that. But if you go to the YouTube stream, you can see some of the clips and also the studio here in Edmond. Well, Richard, speaking of some of the news that he just sent, he he talked a little bit about Boris Johnson yesterday on the program, how that Johnson came in first in the leadership vote by a large margin. So a really a pretty amazing development happening in the UK right now. They usually the process is a lot longer, narrowing it down to the two that would then run off for the position of prime minister. But he's ahead. Boris Johnson is ahead by such an overwhelming margin that there's many people calling for us to not let this drag on, or the UK not to let this drag on for the next 3 or 4 weeks, but to just cut to the chase and to get Johnson in there. I think Richard read this quote yesterday. This is from Tim Shipman at The Times. Boris Johnson guaranteed to be in the runoff for the leadership and is almost certain to be the next prime minister. As I said, this is a pretty amazing development because there's quite a few people. I think even Boris Johnson years ago would have said that I'll never be in that office because there's just so many people that don't like him. Even among the conservatives, there's quite a few people that don't think he's an opportunist, that he's not honest. And yet you can see, you heard it, I think even at the headlines at the top of the hour, you can see how that the number one priority for so many Britons is to get out of the European Union, Brexit. They want someone to follow through on what the people voted on just 3 years ago, 3 years ago this month, as I recall. This one here from The Telegraph says, even someone with Boris Johnson's powers of self-sabotage will struggle to mess this up now. He is almost embarrassingly far ahead, with more MPs behind him than the three next most popular candidates put together. This is from The Spectator. It says, if he ends up facing the not entirely terrifying Jeremy Hunt, as looks likely, victory is all but guaranteed, it says. He used to speak about seizing the ball should it come loose from the scrum. In the event, it seems that the ball might end up landing straight in his hands. That's from Fraser Nelson. And then one last bit from ITV. It says, party leaders tell me Boris Johnson is so far ahead, both among MPs and seemingly among the membership, that it would be politically insane to stick to the current timetable of two candidates beating up each other in public. So, as I say, it's whittled down to Boris, and it's looking as though he may be the next prime minister of Britain. And it would seem, anyway, that we'll be just that much closer to Britain making a clean break from the European Union. This, of course, is a prophecy that Mr. Armstrong was talking about back in the 1950s. Britain's not going to be part of it. And he reiterated this over and again, decade after decade, even up until Mystery of the Ages. There's a statement in Mystery of the Ages about how that this formation of the seventh and final resurrection of the Holy Roman Empire, it would not include Great Britain. How did he know this? How did he know this and talk about it a half century before it actually happened? Who was talking about it back in the 1950s? Of course, today, everyone's talking about it. Everyone in Britain, because they want this. They know. You remember the quotes. We've given them to you before from 1973, I think it was. Mr. Armstrong prophesying. This is an ominous day for Britain. They may not see it now, but they're going to come to look at this day as something they regret ever having gotten into the EU in the first place. So here comes Boris Johnson. And he's got quite a few problems to try to sort out. Spectator has a piece today referring back to something that happened in 2010. It says, "Dear Chief Secretary, I'm afraid there's no money. Kind regards and good luck." This was a joke from 2010. It says, "Liam Byrne will forever be haunted by the note he left on his desk for his successor in 2010. Both coalition parties made much of what was supposed to be a joke about the difficulties of keeping Whitehall spending in check." They've got the same problems that we have in the United States. Just blank checks that are going out right and left. Inability to control spending at all. So much so that it's just a joke. And even politicians know it's a joke. They know it's never going to be paid down, the debt, the astronomical debt figures. In any event, it says here, David Cameron waved the note around in his victorious 2015 election campaign. Byrne later said he was so embarrassed by his mistake that he considered throwing himself off a cliff. There, and then it brings it right to today. It says, "There's nothing funny about what Theresa May leaves on her desk for the next prime minister. Rather than just one pithy note, there's a teetering, disorganized in tray of decisions the Tory leader has been putting off." It says, "For 3 years, Britain has had a government that has been unable to govern." So this is what Boris Johnson is walking into. A government that's been unable to govern, leaving what is perhaps the biggest pile up of unfinished business ever created by a peacetime government. They've just been paralyzed. They haven't been able to get anything done. It's not just Brexit. It says, "Under May, a nuclear winter descended on UK policymaking. She seemed to think that the best way to tackle the burning injustices she named on the steps of Downing Street in 2016 was to pour cold water, not on the fire itself, but on any ideas her ministers came up with." And it goes on to explain how that for 3 years, she's just been doing basically anything to avoid making decisions. This has been Britain's leadership for 3 years. You think of that prophecy in Hosea 5. "Ephraim," it says, "shall be desolate in the day of rebuke. Among the tribes of Israel have I made known that which shall surely be." Verse 11 says, "Ephraim is oppressed and broken in judgment because he willingly walked after the commandment of Jeroboam," that means. No judgment, a broken state in so many ways. Verse 12 says, "Therefore will I be unto Ephraim as a moth and to the house of Judah as rottenness." This is all from Hosea chapter 5. A moth-eaten garment, something that looks good on the outside, but it's rotting from within. my father in the booklet, the Hosea booklet. He said, people only see prosperity, glitter, and glamour. Most people today are only living for the next exciting entertainment. Even though the signs of disaster are there, our nations are refusing to see the moths and worms in our society. There's not much substance left to hold our nations together because of our many sins. And then he goes back and talks about some history. What happened in the lead up to the crash of 1929? What happened in the lead up to World War II? There's so many examples of this. Here again, scratch beneath the surface. There was another article in the stack today about Britain's secret cocaine addiction. Just how much cocaine is circulating throughout Little Britain, this little island. And so many people addicted to cocaine. Government that's paralyzed with inaction. BBC had a story about, or rather it's a story about BBC, how that they can't call terrorists anymore. We've seen this kind of nonsense in years past with U.S. administrations. They won't face up to the evil. They call it by a different name. They try to sugarcoat it. In some cases, they don't even cover it. They don't even give it the attention that it needs. Because they know, they think they know what needs to be covered and what shouldn't be covered. We'll talk more about fake news here in just a second. Verse 13, it says, when Ephraim saw his sickness and Judah saw his wound, well, you know what happens. They go to the Assyrian. They go to Assyria. They go to Germany for help. They go to the Assyrian people. Front Page had an article recently about Germany and the populist wave. And it's interesting what this article has to say just about the nature of the German people. And it brings up some important history once again. some history, the way that they've been. And of course, as this article brings out, the modern thinker or scholar wants for us to believe that all of this has changed, that all of this is different now, that we've learned everything that we needed to learn from World War II, that there's never, ever, ever going to be a threat again coming from Germany. Listen to this article. It says, the whole German standing at lights business is, of course, all about obedience, about a fondness. In fact, a deep-seated, inborn, and well near ineradicable need for exceedingly strict order, even in the most meaningless matters, enforced by a very strong authority, it says. That plus an unshakable readiness to obey that authority beyond the point of rationality, in defiance of one's own reasoning powers, and without ever giving an instant's thought to the possible illegitimacy, imprudence, or immorality of that authority. It says it's this rage for order that explains the insane level of overregulation practiced by the EU, which is, this is what Britain wants out of, keep in mind. All of this overregulation, who's behind it? What nation's really driving this? It says, which is, when you come right down to it, a German operation. The overregulation in the EU. This is a German operation. It says here, the other day, somebody said that one of the regulations the EU is currently working on is a rule setting the proper lengths for candle wicks. Only a bureaucracy run by Germans could come up with such things. Notice the contrast here. It says Americans love freedom, but to Germans, at least Germans with a traditional German temperament, freedom looks terrifyingly like chaos. They don't want that freedom that Americans desire. Very different people, a very different mindset. They want order. They want structure. They want a strong leader, and we know what's coming, don't we? The Daniel H. Strongman. This article at Front Page says, yes, Germans today like to tell themselves and us that they've totally changed as a people, but don't be too quick to believe it. Wow, that's a pretty strong article. It's not telling us a whole lot of new things that we haven't covered before. But it puts it well. They tell us, the world tells us, they've totally changed. But don't be so quick to believe that. Well, so many are quick to believe it because we just want to believe. We want to believe that the world's getting better and better and better. We want to believe that the real evil in the world today, well, it goes back to colonialism, or it's Donald Trump. It's what the fake news media tells us is evil. Look at the reaction. The media just exploded with fury over what President Trump said recently with, I think it was George Stephanopoulos, when he asked about interference in elections. And of course, the president is very much against interference. Well, but what about political dirt? Supposing a foreign nation calls up and says, I've got some political dirt on the candidate that you're running against. And the president said, well, I'd listen. And, well, would you report to the FBI? Well, I don't know. Maybe I would. Maybe I wouldn't. Depends on what was said. And, of course, you had the predictable eruption. Feigned outrage is what it is, even from some on the right. This was Nancy Pelosi came out and denounced it, everyone on the left. But this is what Mitt Romney, he's a Republican. He ran for president back in 2012. But this is what Mitt Romney had to say about the foreign dirt comment made by President Trump a couple of days ago. Clip one.
I don't want to see any foreign government try to interfere in our elections. And we all should stand united to ensure integrity of our elections. What I am appalled about is what has happened in our elections. I watched in the last campaign, the Democrat presidential campaign, spend $6 million to a foreign entity to travel the world to try to find something. When they could not find it, they made false accusations, salacious accusations at that, drove this country into a special counsel lasting more than 22 months, using this false information, sending it to the FBI that went and got a FISA court, then to spy upon Americans, and took us through something we should never have to live again. I did not hear the speaker be appalled at that. Or to have a chair of the House Intel Committee think that he's knowingly speaking on a phone to a foreign entity to supply some other false allegations. And what action did he take? Those are the things I'm appalled about that actually did happen.
That's not Mitt Romney. That's actually the House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy. He's responding to a reporter that was just badgering him over and again about, well, what about digging up dirt on your opponent? And here's the media, again, all of this feigned outrage. And all through and up to the election and after, you had Hillary's campaign not only digging up dirt from foreign sources, paying for it, as McCarthy said there, $6 million. And the media erupts when there's any kind of a what if moment or a statement or a word used by the current president. And here when you had the actual actions, treasonous actions, hiring foreign agents, digging up dirt on a political opponent. This is something the Hillary campaign and the DNC did, and it's out there and it's open. It's been proven now. And everyone in the major media, they have no problem with any of that. The big problem, as they see it, is what Donald Trump said to George Stephanopoulos. It's no wonder people don't take them serious anymore, the major media. It's no wonder so many Americans are just tuning them out. The blatant double standards, the willful blindness, the duplicity, the lying Lots and lots of fake news. Fake news media. Foreign dirt. How could President Trump say that he might listen to someone from another country who had some dirt on an opponent? Well, look, his opponents just 3 years ago, they were working with foreign sources to create dirt. It wasn't even true. It was just fake. Fake dossier, fake news, fake media. And the president repeatedly calling them out, which just makes them that much more angry. This last segment here that I just wanted to get into, a couple of articles in recent days, again, about our ignorance of history and how that's feeding demagogues who hate the Constitution. There was a good article in the American Spectator on that recently, but the other one that I think was even more revealing stood out to me just because of some of the sites that I've been able to visit recently with my family. But it says here, this is from the Wall Street Journal, Civil War battlefields lose ground as tourist draws. It's easy to, you know, I don't have anything to compare it to because I didn't visit some of these sites 20, 30, 30 years ago. But you go to some of these Civil War sites today and you see, you know, some of these history buffs dressed up in the garb of the day. And you think, wow, some people really get into this. Some people are really into it. But as this article brings out, it's not nearly as many as it used to be. It says, once a tourism staple for many southern states and a few northern ones, destinations related to the 1860s war are drawing fewer visitors. It says historians point to recent fights over Confederate monuments and a lack of interest by younger generations as some of the reasons. There's just no interest. So people aren't visiting those sites anymore. And they attribute it to, well, the monuments are being pulled down, but then there's just a historical ignorance that's set in. We don't care. We're not interested. Listen to some of these figures. It says the National Park Service's five major Civil War battlefield parks, Gettysburg, Antietam, Shiloh, and then Chattanooga and Vicksburg, it says had a combined 3.1 million visitors in 2018, down from about 10.2 million in 1970, according to Park Service data. That's 10 million going back, 45, 50 years ago. 10 million visitors at these Civil War sites. And it's just plummeted down to about 3 million. Just a fraction of what it was a generation or two ago. It says in Gettysburg in Pennsylvania, the most famous battle site, had about 950,000 visitors last year, just 14%. Of its draw in 1970, and the lowest annual number of visitors since 1959. Only one of these parks, Antietam in Maryland, has seen an increase from 1970. That's really sad and tragic. It shows what we're forgetting. It also represents a pretty good opportunity for you, particularly if you're living out in that region, on the East Coast or the Northeast. You can get into a lot of these sites, and it's not going to be very crowded. We know this. It says Mike Brown, 68, still plays part of the cavalry in the Civil War reenactments and recently helped organize a recreation of the Battle of Resaca in Georgia. It quotes him as saying, "The younger generations are not taught to respect history, and they lose interest in it." Well, that's right. If they're going to school or if they're going to university and the professor's saying we need to pull these monuments down, we need to tear them down, we need to erase the history, that's not going to get them very excited about visiting Gettysburg. And then you think about, as I covered recently, you think about the ones that are still there that are drawing a lot of interest. It's not necessarily a Civil War park, But Monticello with Jefferson, here people from all over the world. They're showing up to visit this estate and then being told that Jefferson was a monster, that Jefferson was evil. So even some of these sites, they've been feeding on propaganda. It says more recent history is also damping interest, according to this other author. The fatal 2015 shooting of 9 black churchgoers in Charleston by a white man who had embraced the Confederate battle flag, and the 2017 white nationalist rally around Robert E. Lee statue in Charlottesville has transformed how people view Confederate imagery and, in turn, Civil War-related historic sites. In fact, it's the media that's transformed what people think and say and do and where they visit. It's the way the media report these events in Charlottesville, in Charleston. Going back to, again, what I covered just a moment ago with the fake news. They're not interested in objectivity. They're not interested in truth. They're motivated by their agenda, pure and simple. That's their goal. That's their aim. And to listen to this reporter back and forth, you didn't hear it. You just heard McCarthy's response. But this reporter who just wouldn't let it go. What about the dirt comment? We've got to get you to denounce the president over this dirt comment. And McCarthy, to his credit, launched a bit of a truth bomb and said, look, if you're concerned about foreign dirt, you're going after the wrong candidate here. It's the other candidate who not only listened when the foreign nationals called, they purchased it. They bought it. They spent $6 million to get the dirt, to secure the dirt. Well, it was worse than that. They were in on it. They were creating the fake news. And it's still with us in so many ways. It's lingering with us to this day. And these reporters, how sad that you have one comment to George Stephanopoulos, and that's all. Now they're outraged. Okay, now they're upset. Totally blind to what's happening right in front of their faces. When we come back, we'll delve into this subject of the flooding that's just been plaguing the Midwest here in the United States. I was greeted by a wonderful thunderstorm last night here in Oklahoma as well, and of course much of the farmers in the Midwest have really been hit hard, and we've covered some of this in the Trumpet, and I've got some clips to play for you as well when we come back. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show coming to you live today from our Edmond studio in central Oklahoma. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Are we living in the last days? Some dismiss the notion as fanatical, but world leaders and news analysts are issuing warnings that are becoming more and more dire. Could Bible prophecies about the last days actually be accurate? Our brochure can help guide you through the relevant news and history and help you compare these events to what the Bible says. Are we living in the last days? This brochure is available for free right now at thetrumpet.com. Jesus Christ's New Testament church began just weeks after his crucifixion. It set to work spreading Christ's gospel message, commanding repentance and preparing for the coming kingdom of God. But immediately the gates of hell rose against it. Satan-inspired individuals, groups, and governments attempted to silence the message. When that failed, the devil forged a counterfeit, a false church that claimed Jesus' name, but mixed the truth with paganism and lawlessness to lead believers astray. Even more deceitfully, he infiltrated the true church with false ministers to dismantle it from the inside. To understand more about this long-forgotten truth, request The True History of God's True Church. To learn more, please visit thetrumpet.com. The Trumpet Daily.
We've been covering the flooding in one territory and the droughts in others for a number of years. In fact, it's interesting. One of the sound bites that I'll play here in just a second, it refers back to the curses of 1993, and it made me go back to this 1990. If you're watching on YouTube, you can see this cover. This is from, I think it's September, October 1993. My father's article, quoting from the prophet Amos, "I caused it to rain upon one city and caused it not to rain upon another city." And that's more often. We're seeing that on the news. Flooding in one area and drought and excessive heat in other areas. But our farmers, Midwestern farmers, they're being hit by a lot right now. Weather disasters, so-called natural disasters. And, of course, you've got the trade war with China. This is from USA Today. And then came the rain, it says. American farmers already plagued by a near-biblical parade of misfortune that includes years of low prices and a trade war with China are now grappling with record Midwest rain that will likely prevent a large portion of this year's crop from even getting planted. The ground is just too, it's saturated. It's too wet. It's too muddy. They can't even get their crops in the ground. It says, the troubles have created the worst farm crisis since the 1980s, when oversupplies and a U.S. grain embargo against the Soviet Union forced thousands of farmers into bankruptcy, experts say. It says it's not the 1980s, but it's as close as we've been. And it goes through and talks about a series of events. A series of events. The president came out, and, well, he's having to respond to this by giving money to the farmers, all of these subsidies, because of the trade war, because of the flooding. This was President Trump just a few days ago talking about the subsidies that he has in line for U.S. farmers. Clip three.
We gave $16 billion to the farmers to make up for the deficit with China. We gave them $16 billion. We don't give them any. They earn it because they're patriots. We gave them ethanol at 15, which nobody was ever going to do, which Biden didn't do in 8 years as, you know, vice president. The farmers are my best friend. Nobody has treated the farmers better than Donald Trump.
So that's President Trump, as you can hear, they're gearing up for next year's campaign. He's in campaign mode there. He's got to give money to the farmers because a lot of them are suffering. They're struggling. They need help. But like I said in the first segment with Britain, Theresa May, her government, and leaving the note on the desk for the successor to come in. Well, everything's broke. We don't have any money. Good luck. And we just joke about it. How much longer before the line of credit runs out for the United States? The spending, in case you haven't noticed, the U.S. government spending. There is no let up. The trajectory this has been on, going back to the Bush administration and then through Barack Obama and now Donald Trump. There are no fiscal hawks anymore. There's nobody that's saying tighten the belt, reduce spending. It's just spend, spend, spend. And you have to give this current president some credit for standing up to unfair trade practices, for standing up to people in NATO, or nations in NATO, not paying their fair share. But still, the problems and the troubles that are just piling high, there's no end in sight. There's no one. You watch. Watch next year. Of course, you see on the other side, they're saying we need to spend what we're spending today and probably double and triple that level of spending. all these welfare programs that they want to add to America's debt burden. This is, again, from USA Today. It says, last summer, China, which buys nearly a third of U.S. soybeans, slapped a 25% tariff on the crop in retaliation for U.S. tariffs on Chinese imports. So you've got the flooding, and there's no let up. We wrote about this and had a video on this in April. Here we are in June, and it's, again, you don't hear about it that often because the fake news media, they're not concerned about it. They don't care about it. You don't hear about the problems in California with homelessness, like I said on Wednesday's program. They don't care about that. Not enough to cover it. Not enough to give it the kind of coverage that would force leaders to actually look at problems and to address problems. It says Chapter 12 farm bankruptcies have increased from 360 in 2014 to 498 last year. It says further on, although they're still well below record levels, the filings totaled 130 the first 3 months of 2019, the highest first quarter total in nearly 7 years. Another article here from Geopolitical Futures. China, corn, and caterpillars, it says. It says, compounding the losses from the trade war, heavy rains and flooding in the United States' major agricultural regions have led to significant underplanting. Only 58% of land was planted this year compared to 2018, and a five-year average about 90%. Many states are planting even less than the national average. This is impacting many states. And another article at the South China Morning Post, it highlights just the ripple effect of this plague, of these curses. It says, since farmers like Worth, that's referring to one in this article, can't get their grains in the ground, the negative impact will be felt across the agricultural economy. Dairy, beef, swine, and poultry farms will be unable to feed their animals. Truckers won't have anything to haul to market. Fuel providers will lack corn-based ethanol to mix into petrol. Seasonal farmhands won't find work. The fallout from trade war and lack of planting will also reach the farm equipment sector, since new purchases will give way to repairing old machinery. It says, finally, if the harvest is limited, food companies will either do without or import grains at higher cost. So you can come along and try to throw billions of dollars at this, but it's not going to be able to cover everything. There is, as I say, there's a ripple effect, and that's brought out well there in that article, the South China Morning Post. That's from June 11th. Let me give you a couple of local reports. This clip comes from KSDK News, a local news station in St. Louis, and this is just from a few days ago, clip 4.
We've been talking a lot about 1993 when covering these floods of 2019. Farmers we talked to say this is actually worse than 93.
It is the worst. Even in 93 when we had the big flood, I got the crop planted and only lost about 200 acres of crops. We could be up to 700 acres not getting planted this year.
That's referring to the curse of 1993, the one, as I say, that we featured on this this 1993 trumpet, a prophecy in Amos 4. Flooding in one region, drought in another. It's prophesied. It's prophesied in our Bible. Here's another report from Kansas City. This is from Action News, KSHB, from June 6th, just a week ago, clip 5.
It is a problem that will have lasting consequences. Floodwater stunning the growth of many crops, limiting how much farmers will reap.
Now, 41 Action News reporter Sarah Plake talked to one farmer today on how this will trickle down to hundreds of people.
When they struggle, we struggle.
The group After the Harvest has lots of volunteers who go to local farms and glean extra produce to give to people in need. But at many farms, there may not be as much to pick.
It's been a challenge this year with all the rain.
After the harvest works with Geringer Family Orchard and Berry Farm in Edgerton, where the corn is supposed to be up to your thigh, but flooding has severely stunted the crops.
This is the first time I can remember that as of the first week of June, we have not planted anything at all.
That's from Kansas City. You heard it from St. Louis. This is the Midwest, the Great Midwest, the breadbasket of the world, it's been called. All of these curses. The breadbasket. As I say, I went through the California homelessness curse. On Wednesday's show, the Golden State. Look at what's happening to California. Look at what's happening to our farmland in the United States. Well, as I say, we've covered this at length, even recently, going back to April, just a few weeks ago. Of course, you have our booklet, Why Natural Disasters, where we ask the question, the right question, what's wrong with the weather? Why is this happening? Why is it intensifying? Why is 2019 worse than 1993? How much longer will this continue? Well, go back and study. Look at Leviticus 26, Deuteronomy 28, the blessings and cursings chapters, and consider what God has to say about the blessings that He'll pour down upon us if we obey, if we're obedient, and the curses that will set in if we disobey God. One verse, this is from 2 Chronicles, I believe. It says, if I shut up heaven that there be no rain, or if I command the locusts to devour the land, or if I send pestilence among my people, if my people, which are called by my name, you're familiar with this, 2 Chronicles 7, if they'll humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, it says, then will I hear from heaven and will forgive their sin and will heal their land, it says. I'll actually heal their land. I'll remove these curses. Well, look at it yourself. That's covered in Why Natural Disasters, our booklet. But we also produced, I think it was Joel Hilliker. Yeah. From April. April 3rd, the Midwest floods, what it means. Here's what Mr. Hilliker had to say in this little five-minute video that he produced a few weeks back, clip 6.
Over 1 million acres of American farmland flooded. Crops, livestock, roads, dams, homes destroyed. 3 people have died.
It's hard to really describe the devastation that we witnessed. It looked like an ocean. And I mean, I saw the top of grain bins. We saw buildings flooding. I mean, it's just unbelievable. And, you know, that's people's lives. Those are fifth generation farms. Those are businesses, communities.
Across the Midwest, farm losses alone are estimated to top $1 billion. But no one really knows just how much this disaster will add up to. Too much is still underwater. Even worse, more flooding is expected in the next few months. This is the worst agricultural disaster in modern American history. What caused it?
That's from Joel Hilliker just a few weeks ago at the trumpet.com website. You can go to the site to watch that five-minute presentation. And then also, as I say, I would encourage you to review the Why Natural Disasters booklet. When we come back, we'll conclude today's show with some encouraging scriptures, I think, a short Bible study that will just add to the momentum that you're already building to just be more active and energetic as this summer unfolds. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. The relatively new science of archaeology The digging up and study of the material remains of man's past has confirmed without question the historical accuracy of the Bible. Solid, documented evidence, apart from the Bible, confirms events and persons that at one time were known to us only from Scripture. The Bible is real, and you need to pay attention to it. Call now and request your free copy of The Authority of the Bible. This lesson, which comes from the Armstrong College Bible Correspondence Course, blows the dust off your Bible. You will learn how to mine the treasures buried in the greatest book on earth. You can discover its secrets and enrich your life today. For more information, please visit thetrumpet.com. This is KPCG-FM, and this is The Trumpet Daily.
My wife showed me this article. If you're watching the YouTube stream, you can see this cover, this recent issue of the True Education magazine, You Are Holy. She showed me this article yesterday on the plane flight, and it's by Ryan Malone. The subject is on God's Holy Spirit and how it's the Spirit, and among other things, it's the Spirit of power. And I just wanted to focus in on the fifth point that Mr. Malone covers in that article. It's very encouraging, especially for those of us that are advancing in age. As we do, the body does seem to slow down. But as Mr. Malone brings out, when you're going to God for help, when you're going to God for the Spirit of power, just know too how much of a boost that can provide, even physically. Even physically, he gives these examples in Exodus 31 and Exodus 36. I'll just read one of them here. God told Moses, it says, "See, I have called by name Bezaleel, the son of Uri, the son of Hur, of the tribe of Judah, and I have filled him with the Spirit of God." He filled this man with the Spirit of God in wisdom and in understanding and in knowledge and in all manner of workmanship, to devise cunning works, to work in gold and silver, brass, and so on, and in cutting stones, to set them in carving of timber, to work in all manner of workmanship. So this man, this craftsman, was filled with the Spirit of God. And look at what that did for him. Look at what that did even for his profession, for his job. It's easy, I think, to just think of God's Spirit as something that we need. Well, when we're into our Bible study, of course, we need God's Spirit because we want God to open our minds. We want God to help us understand. Or when it's interacting with God's family, of course, we want God's Spirit because we want to love God's people. We want to be patient. We want to be considerate. But when you receive of the Spirit of God, look at all of those benefits. What I just read to you is from Exodus 31, the first five verses. God gave this man wisdom and understanding because of the Spirit of God. But that's not all. He gave him help in all manner of workmanship as well. There's a psalm, Psalm 92, verses 12 and 14. It says, "The righteous shall flourish like the palm tree. He shall grow like a cedar in Lebanon. Those that be planted in the house of the Eternal shall flourish in the courts of our God. They shall still bring forth fruit in old age. They shall be fat and flourishing." You can continue on producing even in older age. I want to encourage you with these last few minutes. If you are working to get outside and walk, to spend more time out of doors, to go through an exercise program this summer, I want to encourage you to bring God into your routine, to really pray earnestly for God to give you power, additional strength, additional energy. Of course, God's not going to help those who won't help themselves. It's got to be a joint effort. It's got to be a partnership. But go to God for additional help. Look at Mr. Armstrong's example. He wrote in 1977, "I have kidded I've been kidded about being 37, or rather I have kidded about being 37, going on 36. It is acknowledged by all, so far as I know, that I appear to be at least some 20 years younger than I actually am. He wasn't boasting here. He was just saying there's benefits that come from obeying God's laws. There's benefits that come from being filled with the Spirit of God. I saw a fellow, well, we got something to eat yesterday. And this fellow, he was a gregarious chap who was just kind of cracking jokes right and left. And I come to find out we're about the same age. And he looked at me inside and said, and I don't think I looked that young, but he then kind of put himself down and said, well, if you've been through what I've been through, I've got a lot of mileage on this body. It was almost like he was reveling in it. Whatever it is he's done or however it is that he's lived. And people tend to do that these days. They hurt themselves. We can make the same mistakes, even knowing God's truth. But you put together, I think the previous point that Mr. Malone makes, number four on his list, I'm sorry I'm only giving you just a little bit of it. I don't have time to cover the whole article, but he talks about obedience in point four. Obedience, and then point five, enhancement of physical skills. Yes, God can actually do that. Who hasn't been? How, as an older individual, middle-aged, elderly, who hasn't been inspired by what God says in Isaiah 40 about the strength and the power that God makes available to his children? Lift up your eyes on high and behold who has created these things that brings out their host by number. He calls them all by names and the greatness of his might, it says, for that he is strong in power. God is strong in power. There's no limit to his depth of understanding and wisdom, and we want that too. But we also want the power of God. Verse 28, this is Isaiah 40. It says, have you not known, have you not heard that the everlasting God, the eternal, the creator of the ends of the earth, faints not, neither is weary. There is no searching of his understanding. He just has limitless energy. The depth and the riches, of course, that's there, Romans 11. But think about the energy and the power at God's disposal. And what does he say in this same passage? He gives power to the faint. He gives power to the faint. He revitalizes us. He gives us energy when we're run down. He helps us go forward when we maybe would rather hang back. He gives power to the faint, and to them that have no might, he increases strength. So perhaps you're sitting there saying, I have no might. I don't have the strength. I don't have the power. I certainly don't have the energy. God says in response, I'll increase your strength. I'll increase your power. It says here, even the youths shall faint and be weary, and the young men shall utterly fall. But they that wait upon the Eternal shall renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings as eagles. They shall run and not be weary. And they shall walk and not faint. Yes, indeed, God gives power to the weak. That's why we don't want to give up or throw in the towel. That's why we should never say, well, I can't do that anymore. Now, I'm not telling you to go out today and overdo it. I don't want you to hurt yourself. We have to use wisdom. But go to God. If you're striving to be more active and energetic in service to God, don't forget to ask him in your prayers for additional strength, for enhancement of physical skills,
for energy.
For power. Mr. Armstrong did that. And look at the fruits. We had one of our listeners remind us of the example of Caleb. Joshua 14. 85 years old. And it says in that chapter, this is Caleb, "I'm just as vigorous to go out to battle now as I was when I was in my 40s. That's quite an 85-year-old. And that's quite an encouragement for us all. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. We thank you for joining us today on the live presentation, whether it's YouTube or the live stream, or if you download this audio later to listen on one of your devices. Thank you for joining us all through this week, and we'll see you again next week.